Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It is Wednesday, December 20th. Happy Wednesday. So nice you're with us today. I'm reading Luke 2 almost every day this week as we prepare for Christmas. Luke 2 says, in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth into Galilee to Judea to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. That's a busy, busy time. And I'm sure you're having a busy time, too. God bless you in your day as you prepare to be with your family and loved ones over the Christmas holiday and as we prepare to celebrate the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. So, in the ninth consecutive year, 33% of Americans consider whatever to be the most annoying word or phrase. So that's it. Whatever. The recent edition of fake news takes second place with 23%, followed closely by no offense. I love that. I love the no offense. I love that kind of that fake rule that if you put no offense in front of something, all of a sudden it's okay. You know, no offense, but your breath could clean my oven. You know, it's all of a sudden it makes it easier, right? Something like that. All right.
I love the fact that no offense is offensive to people.
I know. All right. A couple of words of the day just to get things started here. Exoleuthorostomize. I actually practiced that one. And Rebecca, tell me you don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, good. It means to speak out freely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could see that.
X is out.
Mm-hmm.
And then eleutho, or, you know, to out of the mouth, rostomize. Exoleuthorostomize.
Of course. How did I not know that?
You drop that little bomb and you're going to lose whatever friends you have left. All right. We've got an absolutely great show today. We've got Lauren Libby. I had a chance to sit down with him when he was in town last week or so. And he is executive director or president of Trans World Radio. And he has got quite an exciting chunk of news coming up. Dr. Ken Kaiser will be with us. And then in the second hour, Bill English will be with us. And then author Ward Brehm will be in studio with his new book, Bigger Than Me. Just when I thought I had all the answers, God changed the questions. That's going to be exciting to see Ward. I think I met him when I was 7 years old. All right. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and then hear from Lauren Libby. The other day, I had the chance to sit down with Lauren Libby from Trans World Radio. He is the president, and what exciting news he had for us. So let's join that conversation. Welcome back to the show. Bill Arnold here in studio with Lauren Libby. Lauren is TWR's president since 2008. He's been busy traveling the world, and boy, do we have some exciting news. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning. How are you, Bill?
I'm well, thank you. Let's talk about the big exciting news that's coming up in January.
Well, we have a radio station on the island of Bonaire that speaks to Latin America and all the way to the southern part of the United States. We're upgrading from 100,000 watts to 500,000 watts. Now, that will be at 800 on the dial, and that's just above where KTIS is right here on the AM dial.
That's impressive. So talk about the way that's going to reach new listeners, and it's going to have an impact.
Well, we're very excited about it because Venezuela is obviously right in the target area, Brazil, Cuba. One of the reasons we upgraded power from 100,000 watts to 450,000 is because we want to touch the island of Cuba each and every evening with the good news of Jesus. Our listenership, we get about 1,000 responses a month off the island of Cuba.
Wow, that's amazing.
And things that are going on in Venezuela right now, I mean, people are literally breaking into homes to find food.
Mm.
That's how serious it is in Venezuela.
Wow. Now, the global media outreach engages 190 countries with biblical truth in their language.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and that's been going on for about 60 years?
About 60 years.
Okay.
230 languages every day, 190 countries.
It's just so impressive. It's so powerful what God's doing through this radio ministry. Talk about a little bit about, Lauren, the possibilities that could exist in North Korea.
Well, a lot of things going on in North Korea. I mean, obviously, we see our president and the leader of North Korea going back and forth on Twitter, and that's kind of exciting and helps social media. But aside from that, you know, we broadcast from the island of Guam into North Korea each and every night for about 2.5 hours in Korean. We broadcast, we produce the programs in Seoul. They're backhauled on the internet and then broadcast into North Korea. And it's amazing the responses we get, because listeners take a real chance. Well, they put their life on the line, frankly, when they respond to the broadcasts. And when you look at the responses, there's not a lot of hope in North Korea these days. And for believers, this is literally a lifeline in terms of, how do I be encouraged? How do I look to the future? How do I have hope in Jesus?
Lauren, maybe you could sort of give us a 2017 ministry update. I mean, there's so much happening. And I know you just talked about Bonaire and how exciting that is, heading up to 500,000 watts. That's some power. Maybe you could give us another...
Well, that's only 10 times bigger than KTIS AM.
Well, you don't have to go bragging about
it. Well, I'm sorry.
All of a sudden, it's just now, I don't know if I want to continue the interview.
Of course, you couldn't be legal here in the United States to run that kind of power. And you need to understand that KTIS runs the maximum amount of power in the daytime.
Okay. So maybe just a little bit of an update on what else has happened in the ministry in 2017.
Well, a lot of things have gone on. I don't know whether people really realize it or not, but the world is becoming a more dangerous place for believers in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
In the country of Nepal, it is now illegal to share your faith.
Illegal?
Illegal.
And the consequences are what?
Jail, and more jail.
And that doesn't mean it's going to be comfortable jail time.
No.
It's going to be uncomfortable.
It will be very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have 7 FM stations in that country.
Wow.
And we're seriously evaluating. I mean, how do you function in an environment like that?
I don't know. The stakes are so high.
Well, they really are. India, the same way. It's becoming harder and harder and harder to have a witness for Jesus within the country of India. Russia has passed a law that it's illegal to share your faith outside of a church building.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even do it at home with your family. You could be arrested. The world is just becoming a tighter and tighter place, and it almost reminds you of going back 25 or 30 years to the environment that we were operating in those days. And it's incredible to see what's happening. The restrictions that are going on the body of Christ globally.
Mm-hmm. And there has been an incredible response to some of these broadcasts that have gone on from Bonaire. Talk about how hungry people are to hear the gospel and to hear the good news of Jesus Christ.
Well, in Venezuela particularly, it's a very repressive government.
Oh, talk about chaos.
Oh, well, it is. I mean, you know, they're bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
The leadership basically has the army, and that's how they maintain order. And you go into a grocery store, there's basically nothing to buy. And, you know, people are just surviving, I would say. Our staff, who actually are in Venezuela, who produce programming and backhaul it on the internet to be broadcast in from Bonaire, tell us that there are days they don't even go to the office because it's not safe.
Mm.
They produce their programming in their home, usually in a closet, and upload it on the internet. It's... Well, I would call it a crisis situation in Venezuela, and most people don't even hear about it on the news today.
Mm-hmm. What is it like if you're caught with a radio? I mean, is there some places where if you're caught with a listening device of some kind, you're getting these broadcasts, you're going to be in trouble as well?
Not in Venezuela. Interestingly enough, the government has figured out that mass media is the way they try to influence the populace.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually encourage people to have radios, which plays right into the fact of 800 on Bonaire, TWR Bonaire. And we know we have a huge listening audience because, and people are committed to it. Last spring, we actually did a fundraiser, can you believe this, on the air on the island of Bonaire. We called it Shine.
Shine?
Shine.
Okay.
In Spanish.
Okay.
And so people were calling in on WhatsApp and committing large gifts like 10,000 bolivar, which would be about the equivalent of about $600. I mean, it's just incredible.
That is incredible.
50% of the people that called, about 300 people, said, you know, myself or someone in our family has come to know Jesus as a result of TWR Bonaire.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure that it's on the air, even in the worst of times. We will give to this ministry. And we were just bowled over, frankly. We didn't think we would hear from Venezuela or Cuba. People actually called in from Cuba. They spent a month's salary to make a phone call to encourage the station, TWR Bonaire. I mean, it just brings tears to your eyes when you think about it.
Lauren, we most of us take radio for granted, don't we?
We really do. I mean, you know, you flip it on. Oh, there's KTIS, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. What's with that guy that's talking right now? That's what they think, too. So,
well, there's Bill, I mean. Our friend, he's
yes,
with
exactly,
us.
Exactly. Let's talk about maybe a specific case of someone who came to know Christ through a broadcast. I know that you've got probably hundreds of stories.
Well, let me give you one from Cuba. A gentleman who was blind listened to TWR Bonaire. He felt God calling him, and this man walks between village to village, a blind man, and he's planted 12 churches. can you believe that? 12 churches on the island of Cuba. I've met
him. You've got to be kidding.
No, I've met him. It's incredible, and he's raised up leadership. And because he listened to those broadcasts, he would memorize a message that he heard on the air and then share it with his little house church. And he would always start it off with, "Good evening, this is TWR Bonaire." Because that's the way he thought you started a message.
Oh, my. That's tremendous. I mean, the oral tradition continues in his world. That's what he does.
Well, yeah. I mean, he lacks a major sensory function that most of us really rely on, sight.
So the programming, when you go on the air and you have that much power, are you broadcasting 24 hours a day?
No. As you know, AM radio at night really lengthens out. And so we sign on the air at about 6 o'clock every evening, and we play the Bonaerian National Anthem because it's a part of the Dutch Antilles, Netherlands. And then we begin regular broadcasting. And we broadcast to Venezuela for the first 2 hours in Spanish, and then we switch to English for the next 3 hours. And then we go into the Cuban block for 4 hours.
Mm.
Now, we can also switch the patterns on the antennas to really pinpoint that signal right into Venezuela, right into Cuba, and we can run at different power levels if we have to be able to put a signal where we really want it to do. You can't do that in the United States.
No, you can't. That's very impressive. And I think the power of radio, again, is making a huge difference in the lives of so many who are so oppressed and can't hear the good news. So for Trans World Radio to be able to proclaim the gospel of salvation to as many people as possible, and to do it as effectively as they are, is a joyful thing. And if we can help in any way, how would we do that, Lauren? Is there a way to say, I'm on board with this?
Well, you can go to twr.org, and there's plenty of information there. You can get information. If you'd like to be involved, you can be involved. You know, we've had over 200 volunteers on the island getting this upgrade over the last 3 years. Incredible.
Wow. That's
Bill, you need to come down. You know, in Minnesota in the wintertime.
Yeah, no, I'm all for that.
You know, Bonaire is about 83 degrees with soft breezes.
You had me at hello.
Well,
yeah, just so you know.
Well, let me give you an official invitation to come down and be a part of the TWR Bonaire team.
I would love it. Lauren, thanks so much for coming into the studio. Always a delight to see you, and thanks for your leadership with TWR.
Bye-bye, and God bless you, the KTIS audience.
God bless you, too. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I just insisted Lauren Libby stay. There's more to talk about. And I want to talk, Lauren, about some of the stories of victory that are going on in places like, I don't know, how about Asia?
Well, how about Central Asia?
Okay, let's be more specific.
Well,
let's go to Central Asia.
Yeah, the stands. It would be Kyrgyzstan, Afghanistan.
The stands.
The stands.
The Stand Brothers, yeah.
Yeah, the Stand Brothers. You know, it is amazing. We broadcast in there every evening, and the stories you hear back out, because in these countries that are primarily Islamic, believers are truly, truly persecuted. You know, you have someone come to Jesus, and they meet Jesus. In fact, a lot of people are having dreams these days, and they're seeing a white man dressed in white and saying, go visit someone. Wow. And they go visit that someone who happens to be a believer, and they meet Jesus. It's pretty incredible. This, you know, you say, well, is that an oddity? No, it's really not. It's one of the things that's happening, particularly in Islamic countries. And I met one. And today, actually, his life is being threatened in this country, in one of the stands. And he has a tremendous outreach. He just tells people about who Jesus really is. So he's the Messiah. He's the true prophet. And in Islamic circles, you know, the prophets are very, very big. They start with the prophets, and then they move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells people why Jesus is a superior prophet, because he's the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people actually coming to Christ, about 15 or 20 people that he has worked with. Obviously, politically, he's a target. And we need to pray for these people like that, and particularly in these countries. It is not easy to be there, and it is not easy to particularly be a visible witness for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be a Nicodemus in those countries.
It is, and I feel almost embarrassed to try to respond to this, because, you know, we live in America where, you know, there's mild persecution, but not anything like what this gentleman's going through.
Well, you know, the Bible says in the final days that this is going to happen, so I don't think we should be surprised. I think what we need to do is really believe that that Jesus is moving at a calculated rate, at a cataclysmic rate throughout the world. And whenever persecution actually increases, you notice how the church increases exponentially under persecution. It happens. I was with a leader in a country about 5 years ago, and he was saying, well, we're worried about how many Christians there are in our country and how they're growing. And I said, well, if you really wanted to kill Christianity, you know what you'd do? Legalize it.
Mm.
Because Christianity really moves the fastest under persecution. Just look what happened in China.
Mm-hmm.
In the Middle East, there are several countries where the church is growing and exponentially, and I can't talk about it because there are security reasons. But it's amazing what God's doing right now, and it's an exciting time to be involved in the kingdom of God at this particular point in human history.
Mm-hmm. If we're going to be listening to a broadcast, is there a tell me what the broadcast day is largely made up of? Is it Bible teaching basics? Is it what kind of programming goes on?
A, B, C, and above.
Okay. So,
do you know what the single most listened to program in the Middle East is?
It's the early morning late show.
Probably.
I'm just shy.
Yeah.
I'll have to check the records.
Actually, it's a program that takes you through the Bible in 5 years, and it's called Through the Bible.
No kidding.
Isn't that incredible?
Through 5 years.
Yeah. J. Vernon McGee came up with it, and it's been translated into 100 different languages, and it's the single most responded to program that we have on the air. The second one is a program about how you grow. It's called Discipleship on the Air, DOTA.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a very simple thing. It's like, how to have a quiet time? How do you talk to Jesus? How do you read the Bible?
Mm.
What's the Bible all about?
How to develop spiritual disciplines, it sounds like, which is something we all need a little bit of help with from time to time, don't we?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. Lauren, maybe give me just a response in terms of listener engagement. What kind of interactions do you have with listeners?
Well, we have people, actually, these days, they don't write a lot of letters. There are a lot of texts and phone calls. We have one program called Hope for Syria, and it's interesting to listen. It's a talk show that goes into Syria, particularly beamed right into the refugee camps. And people will call in on their cell phone. For an instance, I remember a lady called in one evening, and I heard this, and it was translated. She said, you know, if I become a believer in Jesus, do you realize my husband will divorce me, get rid of me, and I may lose my life?
Wow.
How do I handle that?
Wow.
I mean, they're very real things.
Oh, yeah.
And so they interact on the air with people like that. And that's very real, real radio.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Well, I think we can all collectively say, yes, let's pray for TWR. Let's pray for Lauren Libby and his leadership, and just pray for the start of this new power in Bonaire starting in January. So, Lauren, thanks again for sticking around. So glad to have you in studio, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, yep. And Merry Christmas to you, the listener.
Exactly. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. It is 30 minutes after the hour. Take a little break for news, and when we come back, Dr. Kent Kaiser should be with us in studio. Be back in a minute.
Where the treetops glisten and children listen.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
The good interviews, I like that, and I love all of the Bible programs with David Jeremiah and so on, and Susie Larson in the afternoon. If you're looking for another option, that you can just get some really good programs, is what I would tell somebody.
Connecting your faith to everyday life. Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Pastor and author Scott Sauls says many people have friendships that don't go too deep. He explains how people are connecting more and more on just a surface level.
One-dimensional friendships, that's when we really relate to other people on the basis of one thing. Like, for instance, you know, my sports friends and political friendships, you know, alignments politically and special interest-based friendships. And the problem with that is you never get to the depth of the other person, and the other person never gets to the depth of you. Like, I can be a one-dimensional friend with somebody for years, and they still not know my children's names, or them still not know the things that I struggle with, the things that, you know, sort of keep me up at night, my dreams, my goals, my ambitions. You know, it's very possible just to keep things on the surface because we have one thing in common, whereas, you know, when C.S. Lewis talks about how friends are discovered, you know, he talks about how one person looks at another and says, oh, you too. But that common ground should propel us, especially if we belong to Christ and we're free to be known because we're completely loved by Him. That initial thing that draws us together should propel us to go deeper, but so often we don't, and I think everybody loses because of it.
That is Scott Sauls. If you want to hear that full interview, and that is a good one, go to myfaithradio.com. S-A-U-L-S is how you spell his last name. And it's The Power of True Friendship. We'll take a short break, and Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio. We'll be right back with him in just a minute.
If you truly want a spiritual awakening in this coming new year, you're going to have to pay a price. This is Jim Garlow. The price is prayer. Prayer isn't overcoming reluctancy in God. It's not persuading Him to do something He's unwilling to do. It is implementing His will. And He will implement His will through prayer. Your prayers. We're not begging God to do something He doesn't want to do. Christian author Andrew Murray wrote, "We must begin to believe that God, in the mystery of prayer, has entrusted us with a force that can move the heavenly world and can bring its power down to earth. We can be history changers, culture changers. We need to pray now for our nation. And by the way, prayer doesn't mean we don't act, but we pray first. Action comes out of that praying." There's more at jimgarlow.com. This is Jim Garlow.
There's some good Christmas music right there. All depends on how you look at it, right, Kent?
Well, yeah. Hopefully we get the whole thing recorded this spring, along with a whole bunch of other music here at Northwestern. I think my instructor is going to come up here and
really
make use of our recording studio to put together an album, including this song.
Really? That's be a popular album for sure. Are you going to bring the pipes in someday?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They'll be able to hear it all the way down the street.
I was at a party, I think, last week, and there were bagpipers, and I think my hearing has just returned.
Didn't they hand out? You see, if you're going to have bagpipers at a party, you have to hand out earplugs. That's what we do at our concerts.
Do you really?
We really do.
Yeah.
We wear them while we play, too, of course, because otherwise we'd hurt our hearing. But we definitely hand them out at concerts.
Wouldn't it just be safer to stay home versus go to the concert? I'm sorry, Ken. Oh, okay, Ken, before we get into the other business I want to talk to you about today, I want to ask you about the kinds of expressions your students use and what are annoying to you. Because for the ninth consecutive year, Americans say whatever is the most annoying word or phrase in casual conversation.
Yeah, I heard you talking about that. That's one of them.
What do you hear?
When they verbalize things like LOL.
Okay.
That's irritating to me, too. the one that I really go off on, though, is when they say, and this is kind of a word usage rather than a specific word, but when they use the word I feel instead of I think, because I think that's a little mini lecture on not doing that. You know, it's so unintellectual to say I feel something when you really mean I think or I believe. And it's just, I think, part of sort of moral relativism where it's mm-hmm. like it's all wrapped up in it, because if you think about it, you can argue against somebody if they have a belief or if they think something. But as soon as they started talking about feelings and emotions and substituting those for rational ideas,
mm-hmm.
well, then how do you argue against somebody's, you know, emotions? And that's kind of what it's all about. And it's just part of this sort of postmodernist kind of approach to argumentation or debate. It's like, well, if you say you feel something, well, somebody can't really attack you or whatever, or you'll feel attacked if they do. So every time a student says, I feel, when they mean I believe, I will stop them right there in mid-sentence. I will say, you feel it or you think it? And so they catch themselves. It's actually kind of funny. After a week or two of my classes, they'll catch themselves and
if they haven't
go back and say,
yet.
I think, I believe.
Yeah.
or they get bold and they'll say, I know, which is even better. Yeah.
But when it comes to feelings, isn't it all tied to your ego anyway? I mean, when people say you hurt my feelings, don't they really mean you hurt my ego?
I felt snubbed,
or I felt disrespected, or... You know, what are feelings?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, do you know how to explain those?
Well, and why would they be coming up in a classroom? You know, there's no reason to be. You know, it's a place of intellectual exchange, and so we shouldn't be discussing feelings in a classroom at all. It should be about what your thoughts and beliefs are, and so I cut it off at the knees. But that's for me the most irritating thing to hear from the students. But and then back to, like, if they say LOL or mm-hmm. you know, OMG, or they use
mm-hmm.
what's, you know, what we call computer mediated communication initialisms, and then verbalize those, it's as if they don't have a vocabulary to use the actual words anymore or mm-hmm. something.
So. And a lot of people, 33% of Americans say whatever is to be the most annoying, the second most annoying.
And I got to say, I don't hear that word as much now as maybe several years ago. So mm-hmm. I heard you talking about it earlier on the air, and I haven't heard that one for quite a while.
What about fake news?
Fake news. I like that term. I use it all. I use hashtag fake news all the time on my tweets when I find fake news in the media. Because the thing is, I think what people don't like, there's actually different definitions of fake news, and that's what irritates, I think, liberals or people who are in the traditional media. To me, I mean, there's the fake news that is a completely fabricated story. That's definitely fake news. I think it's fake news if a news organization puts out news that is false, even on accident. I mean, because I always question then exactly how biased were they not to have checked their sources or whatever to put out this, what I will call fake news. And then there's opinion that masquerades as news, mm-hmm. and that too I consider to be fake news. So I have all kinds of different like categories of fake news, and I will call them out all the time on Twitter. So personally, I like that term.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And the other one, which is a little bit further down the list, is you know what I mean.
Well, that's just a filler phrase.
Yeah,
and, you
I
know,
agree.
I teach speech, and that's one of those things that you just have to try and get people to not do it, sort of like or ah.
Yeah.
Or just even just people will say, you know, and that's just.
Are we just looking for assurance?
I think so. And I've and some other people who I know, you know, one guy who puts in my friend at the end of sentences.
That's annoying.
It's like the Canadians putting A at the end of every sentence.
Yeah.
You know, I did that when I first went to college, and then my friends made fun of me. So I stopped putting A at the end of every sentence, like, because I grew up north. I think that's probably why I was doing it. And I caught my, and they would make fun of me every time I did it. So I weaned myself off it.
Yeah. And your friends have not stopped making fun of you, right?
Kind
of. Yeah. All right, before we go to break, let's at least dip our toe in the water of the latest on the tax plan. Did they voted and then they had to re-vote, or what's the deal?
Well, there were just some technicalities. We're going to get a re-vote here today, and then there's supposed to be a press conference at 1 o'clock to celebrate.
Oh, so it is going to happen?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so tax cut Christmas is around the corner.
That's right.
And we'll find out how happy people are about it. I heard Elizabeth Warren on the radio this morning making it sound like it was the absolute worst thing in the world that could ever happen to this.
Right. It's unbelievable
how
the Democrats try to spin a tax cut as a bad thing.
So no Democrats voted for this at all.
Right. And, well, it's interesting because I think that they really believe that they can continue to spin this as being something negative. And it is interesting. I will give the Democrats credit. They have done a good job of turning public opinion against a tax cut. But as soon as people see that they're getting, approximately $2,500 in their pockets next year, I think I think people will feel that. I think that's, if you got a $2,500 raise in your middle class, I think you'll probably feel that. And if not, like, directly, I think that we're going to see the economy spike upwards. I mean, I think, next Christmas we'll be talking about people spending more than ever.
Right, right.
Because they will just happen to have more. And I think that even if they don't realize it in a direct sort of a way that, hey, that was for my tax cut, they're going to feel it in a sort of a bleak way. And that's good for the Republicans who have passed this. I think it's dangerous, in fact, for any Democrat who's in a state that Donald Trump won, and there are quite a few of them in the Senate, if they voted against it, I think that it's going to be to their peril come the next election.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kent, I've got several more topics, but we'll deal with them right after the break. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. So glad you're with us. Dr. Kent Kaiser is in studio. Welcome back to the show. 12 minutes till the top of the hour. Dr. Kent Kaiser is in the studio. And we, Kent, what I want to talk about now is the way Hillary Clinton has actually come under the close inspection of the FEC.
Well, yeah, this is interesting. There are these rules, and it gets a little bit tedious, but there are these rules about how much money you can give to a campaign, and it's really not all that much. And if you're wealthy and you are partisan, you probably feel like that's where you want to give your money. You know, you feel really committed, right? And so they have these limits, and they're lower for an actual candidate than they are for political action committees or for political parties. And so you and your spouse, let's say, might want to give the maximum amount that you can to the candidate. Well, that's less than you can give to a political party. You can give $10,000 at a time to a political party or to a political action committee. And it seems that the Clinton campaign had sort of an agreement with 32 different states whereby any money that came in to the state party would be effectively just funneled right off to the Hillary Clinton campaign, except for in a few battleground states where they got to keep the money and use it, of course, right there. But if you were from, say, a non-battleground state, I don't know if Minnesota was among them or anything, but if you were in a kind of what was thought to be a safe Democratic state, that money would be funneled directly to the Hillary Clinton campaign. And they weren't even like, they were very sloppy about it. I mean, like, you could be coy about it, make the dollar amounts a little bit different or something, to, like, kind of try and hide it at least. But they didn't. And so, you know, if you were really wealthy, you could, you know, write your $4,700 check or whatever, $2,700 check at whatever it would be to Hillary Clinton's campaign. Then you could turn around and write checks for, I think it was $32,000, something like that, to the Democratic National Committee. And you could write these $10,000 checks, so $320,000 you could disperse to those 32 states that had agreements with the Hillary-Ron Clinton campaign. And then they would just turn around, most of them, just turn around and hand it over to her campaign. Well, that's not legal. That's money laundering, essentially. And that's what they were doing. And these cases have gone back. I mean, people said that this was going to happen, too. I'm not a big fan of these. I got to be honest. I'm not a fan of limiting the amount of money that people can give to a political campaign. I don't understand why we do that. To me, it's a matter of free speech. You should be able to give as much as you want. But I also think that everybody should know where the money's coming from. And this last election bolsters my particular argument, I think, because if you look at who spent the most money, well, Clinton spent way more money, and all of her operatives and the organizations that were behind her spent way more money than Trump spent or any of the organizations that were supporting him. And so it's really, to me, politics, you definitely need money to run in politics, but it's not like it's the end all. So I personally have never had any kind of an issue with people being able to give a lot where they wanted to, as long as people are aware of where the money was coming from. And that, too, is part of the problem with what Clinton was doing here, is that when the money is channeled through the state parties, why then all of a sudden you kind of lose track of who's given that money. And so it's a kind of a way of putting up sort of smoke and mirrors, like, you know, you, Bill Arnold, might have given this $320,000 to support Hillary Clinton, and you sent these checks all over the country. But now when that money actually shows up at the Clinton campaign, it looks like it came from these state parties. Mm-hmm. We don't even know you were involved.
Wow.
So
a little bit of corruption there. And Bernie
we'll
Sanders.
See where it goes.
Would Bernie Sanders have been on the short end of that stick?
Well, this
if
maybe
going, if it's
maybe
going right to Hillary.
Maybe this might have been later along in the election process. You know, this could have been after the endorsement and that. But it sounds like Sanders was on the short end of the stick with the Democratic National Committee right from the get-go. I mean, the whole system, if you listen to the former Democratic operative, or I guess she's still a Democratic operative, Donna Brazile, who was actually the chair of the DNC for a time, she'll say it was rigged for Hillary and against Bernie.
Yeah. And you talk about free speech, Kent, and here's a question, throw it out there. If you can force a baker or someone in the creative arts, let's just use the baker as an example, to decorate a cake with a message that he disagrees with, that he or she disagrees with, can you also force that person to speak those words out loud?
Well, you see, that's a again, this people are thinking about, well, what is this case? You might know about the case of the baker who is before the Supreme Court right now. And the argument is that, you know, you can't if you open your business to the public, you have to provide a cake to anybody who wants to buy it. But as soon as they ask you to put forth a message that you disagree with, then they're infringing on your First Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can't force somebody to write it. You shouldn't be able to force somebody to speak something that isn't consistent with their actual beliefs. Now, some people actually say that, you know, that the business of, you know, just because you open your business to the public, you shouldn't have to just serve anybody. But that kind of goes back to some of the civil rights laws back in the 1960s and 50s. So the courts have ruled on that. So I know some libertarians would say that, you know, you should be able to serve whoever you want if it's a private business, but the courts have said differently on that. But as soon as it comes to expressing a particular idea or ideology, then that's a First Amendment issue.
Okay. What do you think about some of the Democratic senators that are suggesting to Al Franken that he reverse his resignation?
Well, you know, I thought from day one, like, there was this possibility that he, you know, he had left himself some wiggle room. We all said that. And it's a weird speech where he sort of resigned but didn't really resign. And it's not officially until he puts forth a resignation letter. But I think he'll actually go through it. I think right now, my understanding is his office is actually helping with the transition to the person who's been appointed by our governor to go forward. And so I think that we'll probably see an actual resignation sometime early in 2018. But,
okay.
you know, he did leave himself some wiggle room. So I know there are a lot of conservatives out there who are very nervous at this point. Personally, I wouldn't mind if he actually stayed in office, because that would be an easier seat for Republicans to win next year if the incumbent, you know, person who had assaulted women was sitting there still in office. Even if he didn't run for re-election, at least this new appointee wouldn't have a head start against whoever the Republican might be.
Right. Well, Kent, I know you're going to be in town next week, and I'd like to talk about some of the biggest political accomplishments and biggest disappointments of 2017. But for now, let me just say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
to
you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being a regular guest on the show. I just love having you in studio. I look forward to it every week.
Thanks.
Yep. It's 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one.
If you're picking up drive-through coffee on your way to work this morning, tell them Bill says hi. He's from the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
That wraps up Hour 1. Thank you to Dr. Kent Kaiser and Lauren Libby for making Hour 1 so spectacular. Today's the last day of Hanukkah. It's the last day of the Jewish Festival of Lights. It will end at sundown today. It marks the day on which the great miracle of oil happened. It's a particularly special day because it encapsulates all of Hanukkah. Hanukkah celebrates the Jewish people's successful rebellion for religious freedom. A cleansing and rededication of the temple took place after the Jewish people's victory. It's believed that there was only enough consecrated oil to keep the lamp burning for one day, but the small bottle of oil miraculously lasted for 8 days. And it's so that the Hanukkah ends tonight. So happy Hanukkah to all of our Jewish friends. We'll take a short break. Hour two is up next. Bill English is in the green room. He'll be in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.